I walk off the golf course, whatever the weather, however I've played, and because I've found this ability now to cherish those times I'm on the golf course, I feel infinitely better for it. I feel sort of rejuvenated at home to help with the family life. And, you know, if there's stresses, whether it be work stresses or, you know, family, friend stresses, whatever it would be, I find it easier just to compartmentalize it and deal with those one at a time, because I've had that headspace for 3 or 4 hours. And it's so crucial. And that's why I say that getting in your way when you're up playing on the golf course and not allowing your head to have that space, mm-hmm. and getting annoyed with yourself if the game's not great, you're not getting that sort of rejuvenation that I genuinely feel every time I play, and the companionship and the banter and the friendship, it's all great for you. And I think we underplay it. You know, a lot of people don't get the full effect of it because they're too busy, you know, worrying about their eight iron they hit on the 14th or, you know, the shank they hit on the seventh tee. Who cares? Like, you know, let's just forget that completely and just embrace the fact you've got 4 hours of headspace and cherish it while you're there.
Do you believe that golf is good for you? Because if you do, you're in the right place. You find the right podcast for you, because that is our core belief here at Golf Yourself Healthy, that golf is good for you. I'm your host, Chris Lynch. I'm the creator and founder of Golf Yourself Healthy. Before I introduce today's episode and guest, I have a small favor to ask you. Whether you're a new listener to Golf Yourself Healthy or you're a repeat listener, existing member of the Golf Yourself Healthy community, when you're done listening to today's episode, please leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. Please do be kind and generous in your reviews, especially what you say in those reviews, as well as how many stars you give us in that review. I especially mention what you say in those reviews, because ultimately it's the written comments that you leave in that review that help me, us at Golf Yourself Healthy, to know what you especially value about the podcast, what you like about it, but also what we could do more of or less of, or even ideas that you have for future content or episodes. Now, if that blurb is not enough to convince you to leave a review, then I would ask you stick around and listen to the end of the podcast, right through into my wrap-up takeaway section, as I want to tell you a bit more about the impact of your reviews and actually what's in it for you when you give a review in the first place. Also, please do head over to golfyourselfhealthy.com, as there you will find our latest journal articles. Since our launch in February this year, 2024, I have written 2 journal articles so far. So you have a February and a March edition. I write these monthly and put them up there monthly, totally free to access on golfyourselfhealthy.com. So make sure you go there, read up and get up to date on the latest editions. And also you can look forward to the April journal coming out shortly, in which I'm going to be exploring the much debated subject of growing the game of golf. I'm asking the question, why are we growing the game in the first place? So, to today's episode, to today's guest, Alex Frolish. Alex is a talented golfer, a golf entrepreneur, a golf writer, a golf course reviewer, and an all-round good guy, quite frankly. Alex and I met around a year ago now, at a time when Golf Yourself Healthy was in its concept phase, hadn't yet been launched, and he was one of the first people that I asked to be a guest on this podcast. We met at Craddock Golf Club in Mid Wales, which is around where I live and where I was a board director at that club at the time. And Alex came to visit us in his capacity of golf course reviewer. And in my conversation with him, both then and indeed in this podcast episode, we chat about how Alex combines his job as a commercial airline pilot with his work as a golf course reviewer for top100golfcourses.com. Alex can be found. The name he goes by on Instagram, for example, is Elevation Golfing Nation, hence the title of today's episode. And I'll be sure to put a link in that in the show notes. He has just, as you can imagine, played some of the finest courses in the world, and with that has developed an appreciation for and a vast knowledge of golf course architecture. We chat about some of those golf courses in this conversation, including Cleeve Hill Golf Club in Cheltenham, where Alex and I played a round of golf just before we recorded this podcast. A round of golf on Cleeve Hill is, well, in my experience, it was something quite spiritual and really quite otherworldly. If you ever get the chance to play it, it's a must in my book, not just because of the course itself and its surroundings, but also because of the diverse and progressive nature of the club itself, which is managed by Simon Pope and his team. And I've had the pleasure of getting to know them through recording this podcast and who I can now count on as members of the Golf Yourself Healthy community. I've edited out the part of this conversation where I gloat about my approach shot on the 18th at Cleeve Hill, which halved our match, as nobody really likes a show off, do they? But seriously, the reason I mention it here is because of how Alex made me feel, both in that moment and throughout the round itself. And if you listen carefully to what Alex has to say about why he loves golf and what he loves about golf, it's clear that he gets just as much enjoyment out of ensuring his playing partner's having a good time and playing well, as much as he wants those things for himself. Ultimately, this is a conversation not just about what is great about the game of golf, it's about how to be a good and proper person both on and off the course. So, without any further ado, let's embrace the rough and cherish the fairway. Alex, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Thanks very much for agreeing to be on the pod. As has become somewhat customary for certainly most of the early episodes of Golf Yourself Healthy, we kind of start off an episode with a reflection on the round that has just been. So I've been lucky enough so far with the early episodes that I've been able to come to a guest where they are, go to where they are, get a round of golf in. And we have just played at your home club, Cleeve Hill.
We have.
Let's spend a couple of minutes talking about Cleeve Hill, actually, because I like to take the listener on a bit of an educational trip sometimes where golf courses are concerned. So can you tell a bit about the history and the story of Cleeve?
Yeah, well, at Cleeve's, there's been golf played on Cleeve Hill. It's just north of Cheltenham, the town, the racing town, obviously. And you can actually see it from the footage. If you ever watch the racing, you can see the hill behind. The golf course is on top of that hill. It's the highest hill in the Cotswolds. And yeah, golf, 130 years or so has been played on the hill. Old Tom Morris laid out a course, and you can see quite a few elements of that course still today. And then Alistair McKenzie of Augusta fame came and altered a few of the holes, created a few green sites. And what you've got is common land, firm turf, expansive views, and the wind changes every day, which changes the way the fabric of the round. It's just a great place to play golf. And for people who are learning the game, it's great because from the tee, there isn't too much jeopardy. There are a few holes where there's places you don't want to hit it, but you'll probably find your ball. So it's not one of those places you're going to lose 10 or 15 golf balls. It's, you can open your shoulders. It's all about the shots into the green. And in the meantime, it doesn't really matter how you're playing because the views are so expansive and it just feels like somewhere you want to be anyway, whether you're playing golf or not. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you about, because I think you briefly shared this with me before, and you know, if anyone goes out there and reads a bit of the more recent history, it was fairly close to extinction at some point, was it not?
It was, and it's one of those things. It had become unfashionable. It was running a certain way, and in the local area, people didn't really realise what was here, you know, history-wise. Mm. And because of the common land, you've got walkers, you've got animals in the summer, sheep and cows and horse riders. It became a place that people didn't embrace what it was about, and they'd missed the point, you know. And I think it was brought into focus when in 2020 it nearly went out of business, the club, and luckily some local two local businessmen came in and saved the club. They saved the club in the right mindset, so they knew what it was about. They've created what they've called a Cotswold hub, trying to bring all their elements of people who use the hill together at the focal point of the clubhouse. So getting walkers and others to use the clubhouse, make it feel open, welcoming. And at the same time, get the golfers to mix in with the other people who are using the hill. And they, I think they've done a very good job, and I can see a bright future from a position where there was not very much of a future for the club. So,
well, I would agree just based on that one experience I've had today, and I very much look forward to going back to Cleve. You know, I always try, especially when I play a new course or go to a new club for me, kind of record my takeaways. And there are three key takeaways: CCD, coffee, carry, dogs. Now, let me expand on that. So I'm a big coffee connoisseur. So going into that clubhouse, like, I think what I noticed was, as you mentioned, there's a coexistence of golf and people that are up on the hill walking. And I was just talking about this with Giles, who works at the golf club, how you can see, and again, golf yourself healthy, we care about golf being progressive, being diverse, inclusive, and accessible. And what I could see with my own eyes was members of the public who most likely are not golfers and who may have historically had in their own mind an image of golf can be stuffy and whatever else, but it felt inclusive in there.
I agree. And that's what they needed to do. And that's what they'd never achieved before. Mm. And that's why the place had kind of dwindled to nothing. It had curtains that kind of covered the windows. It looked foreboding. People didn't want to enter. You know, the door swung open and everyone would turn towards the door. You know, it had that vibe. And now it's, you know, it's bright and airy. You've got walkers, like you say, just sitting, having a coffee, having had a nice walk. You've got dog walkers and children and families. It's just got a nice environment. And I take my family up there on a Friday evening, a Saturday evening, young kids, and they'll wander around the putting green. There's no sort of stuffiness about, oh, you can't do this or you can't do that. It's just an open environment where everybody is welcome.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main parts of Cleve. If you saw that on your first visit, then that's great.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely did. Good blueprint, I think, for a lot of other golf clubs to follow. Tom Morris, the architect. Now, well, I'll ask you to expand on this, but just again, I did a little bit of research before I came here, and I just did not appreciate the embarrassment of riches of like how the amazing golf courses. Can you reel off a few other than
obviously
that a listener might recognise?
Well, obviously he's associated with St. Andrews. He didn't design St. Andrews. Yeah. You know, he obviously didn't. It's been there much longer than he. But, you know, there's places that he was involved heavily, Prestwick, places like that, you know. And his, the thing that I've always found with Tom Morris that was interesting is that he travelled further than you realise. When you think about Cleve, you think, wow, well, why did he come here? How did he get here? You know, why would he have done that, you know, at that time, you know, in the late 1800s? But he'd become a progressive. People had seen him outside of Scotland. They'd seen, you know, his influence was growing and he was in demand. For whatever reason, he was brought down to Cleve Common to do his work. I'm glad he did, because he's one of the best architects at using interesting ground and making the best of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what architects should be doing anyway, but he found a way to use hollows, and Cleve has been used for excavations for Cotswold stone and taking stone off that hill to then go and build houses in the local area. So it leaves quite a few pits, as you've seen today, and furrows, and he used that ground so well on the holes that are still visible today, and also on the holes that you can go up there and see that aren't there anymore as golf holes, but you can still see where they were. And you understand how he would have looked at what seemed an improbable, impossible task to put a golf course up there.
Absolutely.
And he made some amazing golf holes, you know, from what land you see is amazing, but also difficult to sort of work out how you would structure something through that ground.
Definitely. Well, I mean, the listener can, like I did, go on top100golfcourses.com and see, I mean, it went into 5 or 6 pages, so I reeled off, and, you know, there'll be a few listeners or friends of this podcast listening who will recognise places that, you know, Carnoustie, I think, I've got Cruden Bay, Macrahanish, Lahinch. I mean, the list is endless.
And it's all the
what
stuff.
What a talented.
And it's all, if you go to all those courses and think what you'd say is incredible grounds, the golf course has been rooted in the Cruden Bay, Lahinch, Macrahanish, one of the most natural links golf courses you'd ever wish to play, the front nine at Macrahanish. And, you know, he had a way of taking ground that was very good, obviously, but making it feel like the golf course was literally part of that ground. It was meant to be. Mm. And it's a really clever skill that you don't appreciate unless you really think about it. You know, you just take it for granted that he was able to do that. But when you look at what he had to deal with, and I mean, Makrahanish is a really great one. There's a hole, I think it's about eight, it's a par four. And you kind of just pincer through the dunes up to a green site that seems like you would never have thought to put it. It rises above the fairway. And it's just amazing theatre. But you can't imagine how, if you just sort of blur it all away from being a golf course and just a bit of ground, what he would have had to do to sort of bring himself to rooting it and having it in that position, that green site and that tee through that sort of narrow valley kind of thing. So yeah, I've got a lot of respect for old Tom Morris, obviously with his link to Cleve, you know, a soft spot for his architecture.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll move off old Tom Morris now, but I mean, I am looking forward to coming back in May and playing this one club challenge.
Well, you need to play with one club after today.
And there's still spaces left. So anyone listening to this who maybe fancies joining us on the day?
Well, we've got enough space for 100 people. I think what we'd like to do is try and get it to 72, something like that. It's meant to be, the vibes are meant to be one club, no golf bag, out there having fun and trying to move your ball around the course with one club. So yeah, if you're up for it and you fancy coming and seeing Cleve, please get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're saying the principle's based on almost being light and not having a whole golf bag, but if, like, well, I didn't lose a ball today. But if you are a ball loser, then you might need a few deep pockets to...
Just a rucksack. Just a rucksack. That's fine. Just a couple of balls.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. Alex, let's move on to part of this podcast we like to call the spirit of your game. So talk us through your beginnings in golf. And
well, yeah, I first picked up a golf club when I was three, and so I used to swing it around the back garden of our house. It was cut down. It was probably no more than a foot long. It was an old three or four wood. It had masking tape as the grip, and I'd just walk around in the garden swinging this thing, bashing it off the turf, hitting those little balls, the air balls, you know, the ones that had holes in plastic balls, and I'd hit them around the garden. And yeah, I was just completely taken with it from being three, four, five, swinging a golf club. I'd be doing it every day at some point. And that just grew into lessons, junior lessons. And I played a lot of junior golf, got down reasonably low. I got down to three when I was in my mid-teens, you know, so I played some really good standard junior golf. And then my story is kind of in three. It's junior golf. It's a period where I didn't play. I joined the Air Force. I was in the Air Force and I didn't play for 5 years while I did my training and stuff like that. And then there's a period, 4 or 5 years of frustration because I came back to golf and I wasn't as good. I was struggling with certain elements of my game. I was playing off five or six, but I was struggling to hold my own at that, you know, and I'd be hitting the ball over the course, hitting shots I'd never hit before. And then the last 7 or 8 years, it's kind of not the epiphany, but the understanding what golf is really about. And the reality is you can't complete it. You're never going to perfect it. You'll never play the perfect round. So why stress about it? Because and the more that I've traveled and played other courses with other people, and like today, for instance, a great place and on a great day of weather with great companions, how I played or didn't play or... it should not affect how it feels. And it took me to my mid-30s to realize that golf is not about how you hit the golf ball and how you play on that day. And if you define your enjoyment of that trip or that golf trip by how you played, you're not getting it right, in my opinion. And that's having played a lot of golf in my life, you know. And I still love playing well, don't get me wrong. That's not. But for me... it's taken me that long and, you know, loving the game and hitting golf balls and going to the range. And I still do enjoy doing that. But I'm now at that stage where I really enjoy just being on the course and taking it all in and the joy of somebody else's good shot or like yours on 18 today. Hmm. Watching you hit a good shot gives me as much pleasure as me hitting a good shot. And I mean that genuinely. And I think I said to you on the 14th or 15th tee, it's much more enjoyable if everybody's playing well. And what I mean by that is that everybody's enjoying themselves. Nobody's down on themselves. Nobody's feeling like they're feeling under duress. And if everybody's enjoying the game, that makes for everybody's enjoyment levels being higher. And that's what I believe with the game.
Yeah, that's a really nice outlook, Alex, I have to say. And it was sincere. I can tell it's sincere from you. And I think a lot of people listening to this, I think, can learn a lot from that outlook because... Look, I mean, I think we'll, any or most that play golf, I'm sure will have an interest in self-improvement. But at the same time, I agree with you, your overall enjoyment of the round can be enhanced exponentially if you're invested in your playing partners, how they're getting on, how their game's developing. And there's something very inclusive about that, I think, as well, you know, because, yeah, that egged me on a lot today. And that was nice because, yeah, I've started from, yeah, having been a high handicapper for a long time and probably been very close just packing it in because it was too hard. But then when you play with people like you that are encouraging, I think that can only help.
Yeah, I think the thing with that is with high handicappers, I play a lot of golf with a lot of different standards of players. And I think the key is not making the rules too onerous, not making the punishments for a bad shot too punitive in terms of you need to go back to the tee. You need to, if when we're just playing a friendly game, put the ball somewhere else and hit the next one, get some enjoyment out of that hole where you've hit a bad shot. And what you don't want is people throwing clubs and walking, dragging the clubs along the ground behind themselves because they're so down on what's just happened. Mm. Everybody hits bad golf shots. So the key to me is that we keep the mood positive when you're playing so that people don't feel down for too long because,
right. Yeah.
You know, that's not what we're there for, you know, and life's so busy and so quick and so high paced for everybody. Being on the golf course is meant to be a place of refuge. And if you're not enjoying being there as a collective, three or four of us today, if you're not enjoying being there, you're missing the point. And even when the golf's bad, and we can't all play good golf all the time. So you have to accept, you know, I lost two balls today. I play off a lowish handicap. You lost none. At no point did I walk up that hole that I'd lost the ball thinking I was, you know, I just thinking about everybody else's shots. And that's how it should be, is what I'm trying to say. You know, we should try and see the best of even a bad hole.
Yeah. And something you've just said there is making me think about how when you're playing a match like we did, so the four of us today, 2v2 match play, I have to admit, I love match play as a format. But, you know, in the past, I've felt that pressure of, oh, you know, am I good enough to play with this guy? Like in Jeremy's case today, like he's played the game a long, long time and he knows what he's doing and he hits a nice ball and things. But he egged me on as well. And it was a lovely, and how do you find that? Like, what's your preferred way of, do you like match, but do you like a sort of a communal experience or are you more of an individual? I don't know.
I would say match play, I enjoy competition. I've always been competitive, but with a fun element to it. So a match today, that was absolutely perfect. We were three or four holes up. You guys roared back in. We halved the game. We all came off smiling. That's amazing. You know, that's what a great thing. We've all had those juices flowing and a bit of pressure on the odd shot, but not really.
Yeah.
But we've hit nice golf shots. You've hit some great ones coming in and you know, it's just made it a great collective experience for all four of us.
Yeah.
But what I do like about golf, and this is counter to what a lot of people talk about not counting score or anything like that these days, I love the fact that it's when you've got a scorecard in your hand, whether it's Stableford or you're just out for nine holes, I love the fact it's you versus the architect. So the architect has laid out something, a set of challenges. It's like a steeplechase, you know. There's a set of challenges there and you're going to go out and try and figure out what's in front of you and get your little white ball from A to B in as few shots as possible. I love that. It's just down to you. I don't know what other sports you've played. Obviously, you're keen on football and things like that. Tennis, I think you said in a previous pod and stuff. Sports, I've played a lot of team sport. Golf's one of those sports where it's all about you at the end of the day. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. But it's you can't really complain because it's all about you in that sense against the course on a stroke play sort of arrangement. And I do like that sometimes where you've, you know, it's just about how you can sort of keep yourself level, move your ball forwards, not take too many downers when you hit bad shots and just keep things on an even keel. Mm. So yeah, the answer to your question is both. I like both elements. And I also like going out and not keeping score as well. So
yeah,
all senses.
Nice. I feel like what we're talking about here leads us probably nicely into talking about how, again, core belief, core value of golf yourself healthy is just built on the belief that golf is good for you. So how, for you, in your own words, in your own experiences, is golf good for you?
Yeah, so it's been good for me in a memory sense because my dad passed away when I was 15 and I associate those early years of golf, cherished good memories with my dad teaching me how to be around the course and stuff. So it's good in a memory sense, in that sense. In more recent times, when life has become more stressful, without touching on lots of sadness, but my mum passed away about 6 years ago, and the period that I found level calmness on a golf course has come since my mum. And I find it, I walk off the golf course, whatever the weather, however I've played, and because I've found this ability now to cherish those times I'm on the golf course, I feel infinitely better for it. I feel sort of rejuvenated at home to help with the family life. And, you know, if there's stresses, whether it be work stresses or, you know, family, friend stresses, whatever it would be, I find it easier just to compartmentalize it and deal with those one at a time, because I've had that headspace for 3 or 4 hours. And it's so crucial. And that's why I say that getting in your way when you're up playing on the golf course and not allowing your head to have that space, mm-hmm. and getting annoyed with yourself if the game's not great, you're not getting that sort of rejuvenation that I genuinely feel every time I play, and the companionship and the banter and the friendship. It's all great for you. And I think we underplay it. You know, a lot of people don't get the full effect of it because they're too busy, you know, worrying about their eight iron they hit on the 14th, or, you know, the shank they hit on the 7th tee. Who cares? Like, you know, let's just forget that completely and just embrace the fact you've got 4 hours of headspace and cherish it while you're there.
Absolutely. You mentioned your dad introduced you to the game. Is there, you know, going down memory lane here, if you're comfortable doing so, Alex, like, is there any lasting, you know, one particularly abiding memory of an experience with you and your dad on a golf course?
It's a great question. There is. We used to go to Woodall Spa. So Woodall Spa, famous Hodgkin course in Lincolnshire. Deepest, darkest corner of Heathland Golf you could find. It's a beautiful little town. We'd go every October when the clocks changed. Family four ball, my brother, my uncle and my dad. And I used to walk it when I wasn't old enough to play. And then when I got to being about 12 years old, they'd let me play with them. I just remember there's a hole, it's the 12th, it's a par three, and the bunkering at Woodall Spa is epic in that the bunkers are deep. You know, you go in a bunker and it's a big problem. And my dad was a 24 handicapper. He was a, you know, and he went into the, there's a bunker on the front left of the 12th at Woodall Spa, and it's about as deep as a bus, or it felt like that when I was a kid. And he went into this bunker and he smoked a pipe. And I remember seeing this, I couldn't see him. I could see the top of his club as he was practicing his swing and stuff. And I could see the pipe smoke sort of slowly raising. And I heard three thuds, followed by a bigger thud. And then I saw a ball come out, which had obviously been thrown. And I just recall this sort of smiling, even at a young age, the frustrations of golf. You know, he's made the error, he's in a bunker. But yeah, he didn't hold on too tight with bad shots, and he didn't mind. It was just a nil point on his Stableford card or whatever. He was fine with it. But it makes me smile still thinking about it, that sort of mist haze kind of floating out of the bunker as he's smoking his pipe, yeah, as he's, yeah, hitting, yeah, shots. Yeah, funny.
That's a great story. I love that. Thank you for sharing. I'd like to move into talking about professionally, you've got a really interesting setup, right? Which, you know, us getting into this now will lead it into us telling the story to the listener as to how part of your professional background, I think I can say, is how you and I ended up meeting, which we'll get to. But tell us about your day-to-day work and what you do for...
Yeah, well, I was an RAF pilot for 11 years, and then I've moved into commercial flying now. So I fly commercially around the world. And as I try to bring the two things together, obviously this passion for golf and also flying and travel, and I started travel writing, basically. So I started writing about golf courses, golf course architecture, taking photographs, and it's all kind of come together now, where I've written for a couple of publications and I review golf courses for top 100 golf courses, which is why I met you at Craddock Golf Club.
That's right.
But yeah, and then I, on the side of that, I've got a business where we import golf products. And that sounds, you know, very capitalist but it's the reason I got into that, again, back to relationships, was because I was traveling around the world and I was finding friends, people I was getting introduced to who had got little businesses creating little products that had no viewership, that they weren't involved with big companies or tour players or anything like that, but they were creating really interesting products. And I thought, there's loads of things here that UK golfers would love to see. And that, we started bringing things in. The first product was from a a chance meeting with somebody in America who had a golf glove. I thought it was great. They weren't available in the UK. That's why we set up the business. And three-pronged attack of busy life. Yeah, flying, writing, and then the golf selling business on the side, you know, selling products.
There's something in the way you've just framed that it's essentially, you know, it's funny how life works, isn't it? And the way in which you sort of people come into your life and, you know, which I think we'll expand on naturally in a moment. But in terms of, so EGN Golf is the part of that's the trading name for, and that's the web, I think, is that the website?
That's the business.
That's the business. What I find intriguing about that, Alex, is my first question was going to be, do you have any competition in that space? Are you quite like niche or are you...
I suppose the thing with buying and then selling products is if a really great product pops up, then obviously other people might want to bring it into it. But what we try and do is just find innovative products that are still, they're really new, starting out, you know, and maybe they may only stay with us for 1, 2, 3 years, and then they might get a deal with an American Golf or, you know, that kind of thing. And they'll go beyond the level that we are in terms of selling. But I just like sort of connecting with people who've had a great idea and they're trying to make things better and give golfers more value for money or a better product. It's one of those things. There isn't that much competition really, because there's millions of people out there making things, selling things. The opportunities are infinite, really. You know, there's lots of little, when you actually start looking, there's lots of people making products for every part of golf, from footwear, clothing, practice tools, you know, you name it. There's a myriad of things you can go and kind of shine a spotlight on.
Yeah. There's in terms of, you know, speaking both as a customer of yours and also an appreciator of progressiveness and sustainability, a cause which I have to say, you know, probably this year and the last couple of years I've really taken a much more of a invested interest in sort of doing my bit to try and save the world kind of thing, you know. But, you know, even just if I think using a golf tee that is made from recycled coffee grinds is me doing my bit to save the world, I'm all for it, you know. But there's something just, yeah. So these are interesting products. I guess it leads me to ask you, you know, how much of you setting up EGN Golf and selling these sustainable golf products is that almost like a core value to you personally, or is it more, is it just naturally come with that in terms of sustainability, innovation?
It's with the flying situation, obviously, because I fly, my personal carbon footprint, obviously I'm doing a job, but you know, I'm aware that flying, you know, has a lot to do to make sure that the carbon neutrality and fossil fuels and all the rest of it, trying to work out ways to make aviation better. So that's part of my, you know, life. So the things that I can control with something like EGN is I'm keen to make things like the packaging that we use and the packaging that things come in, you know, sustainable, the products that try and keep the travel time to a minimum. You know, if I can buy it from somewhere reasonably close by, or we can buy it in a way that it comes and takes longer, but it's got less of a footprint, to me, that makes sense. You know, we're not a huge multinational business here. It's on a reasonably small level, so we can do it in the right way, you know, and it's more of a labor of love than it is, you know, we're not going to take over the world. That's not what this is. It's an enjoyable business. In that sense, yeah, it is a core value, and we'd like to stick with that as we go forwards, looking for other products and people that we work with.
So the other part to Elevation Golfing Nation, people can find you on Instagram, for example, right, is the golf course review part of your brand, if you like. So tell us a bit more about that.
That's just a love affair with the artistry of architecture, you know, and how the ground, and back to what we were talking about enjoying where you are. I mean, everybody gets that feeling when you're on a tee box and you're looking out over some waves, or you're on a mountainside looking down over like a Craddock, looking down on that back nine. I think it's the 12th, and looking up towards Penny Fan. You know, I've just got an appreciation for the surroundings and what has been done with the ground and the artistry, because I'm not artistic at all. You know, it's just not in my psyche. And so I just respect the levels of detail of someone like Alistair McKenzie, who could paint a picture and use camouflage and and an undulation in such a way that is just amazing. Once you walk down the hole and look back and you can see what's unfolded over those 10 or 15 minutes that you've just played, you know, and you saw it in one way from the tee and you were completely deceived. And I just love that. And I've always written. So I've written throughout my life in various forms, and it just seemed a natural fit to write about golf. So it just started as a hobby and it kind of grew from there and, you know, to end up writing a few articles and a few reviews. And yeah, it's still a hobby, but it's one that's, you know, not all encompassing, but it, you know, you're always thinking about the next golf course, the next trip, the next buddy you're going to meet for a game. That's, you know, it's one of those things, eh?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, I want to delve just a little bit more into the writing, because in, you know, Golf Yourself Healthy is still quite new and it's forming, and this podcast is really probably the biggest part of it so far. But I've just written my first journal for it back in February, which was, you know, reflecting on the life and time of my son and how he's the inspiration behind Golf Yourself Healthy. Is very cathartic for me, writing that article, but just the writing, full stop. Do you find the same?
I do. And I find when you get the right headspace just to sit for 40 minutes and put some thoughts down, and you've had these thoughts building up maybe about a course or about an article, or, you know, I like writing things like poems, poetry to do with golf. So, you know, like stitching lines together about feelings when you're out on the golf course. And when you have the opportunity to sort of that jumbled mess in your head to put it down onto paper, I really do enjoy that process of stitching sentences together. And, you know, that word is great, but there's a better word out there. So I'm going to stick a line around that word and I'm going to come back to it. Mm-hmm. And just working your way up and down the paper until it resembles what you wanted it to be when you thought you were going to start writing about something. And it's more than just writing it from A to B. There's A to B and then back to A again. Mm. And I really like the process of going back up and down the page and reviewing what you've written and trying to get those one-liners that you thought about late at night and get them down exactly as they came to you. Sometimes they sort of come and go and you're still searching for what you thought when you had the idea.
Well, I was going to ask, is there a place or a setting or a scenario in which you find you're at your best with writing?
Yeah, it's when I travel, actually. So it's normally when I'm an early morning, I'm jet lagged, I'm in a hotel somewhere, I'll go and get a cup of coffee and I'll just sit, you know, the rest of the city that I'm in might not have come awake yet. And I'm just sitting looking out at something and I'll just sit 45 minutes with a cup of coffee and I'll just write away, you know, clearing my own thoughts, probably with some headphones in. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is the best time. I mean, obviously, you know, family life and busy job and trying to find pockets of an hour is other than late at night. And then obviously you're tired. And often when you write tired, it's not as good. So yeah, early in the morning, thoughts to myself seems to be the best part of the day for me.
Yeah, nice. So let's lead now into, again, a value at Golf Yourself Healthy is about storytelling. And there is a story that needs to be told to the listener as to, first and foremost, how we met through. So let me set the scene and I'm going to hand it over to you at some point and you're going to take over.
Okay.
You know where this is going, don't you? I think
I do.
Right. Okay. So for the listener's benefit, and I think I don't know if I've shared this too much as yet, but so early last year, 2023, I took on a voluntary board director role at my golf club in Mid Wales. And I had responsibility for the course. I was the greens director, I think it was called, whatever grand title they gave me. I remember, so Alex got in touch with the club in his capacity of being a golf course reviewer and said, I'm going to come and visit your course and do a review on it. So I don't know if I've shared this with Alex already, but I'll be honest enough to say I jumped on that for two reasons. Because one, I thought, well, in my profession, you know, in my capacity of being on the board, I want to be there when he visits and give him a good experience and sort of not quite roll out the red carpet, Alex, you know, but I'm sure I wouldn't be the first hosting golf club to try and butter you up kind of thing. But also I thought, well, I really want to build my networks. I had this idea for Golf Yourself Healthy even back then. I thought this could be someone really useful for me to know, and you most definitely are. And beyond, you know, I count you as a friend now as well. You know, and
yeah, same. Yeah.
You know, and so we go out, right? We go out and have this round of golf, and you know, I remember working with the course manager that day. We were like, right, we'll try and get the course in the best nick possible. We'll make it look as nice as it can. You know, we'll get a 5-star review out of Alex or whatever kind of thing, you know, and we had a nice coffee in the clubhouse beforehand. We went out and, you know, we're having a nice round. We're having a nice chat on the way around, and we get to the par 5 14th. Do you want to take over from here?
Yeah. I hope this member at Craddock doesn't listen to this, but we it was quite a slow round, wasn't it? It was one of those afternoons. The weather was nice. People had taken the opportunity to fill the tee sheet, and it was just taking a while. And there was just the two of us, and we'd been waiting a bit, and we got to the par 5 tee, and there were people in the fairway and there were people on the green, so we can't go anywhere. And the people behind us kind of just wandered up to the tee, and one gentleman in particular made his displeasure more than well known as you were just over the ball. And I had this confliction, because obviously everything that I've been saying about enjoying your round of golf, enjoy the headspace, and obviously in my capacity as reviewing the golf course with you as a sort of member of the board of the club that I'm visiting. But internally, I was kind of fizzing at his reaction, because he acted like it was our fault. And, you know, I think that's a kind of, to anybody out there, I think we as a two dealt with that quite well that day, because I think different outcomes could have occurred, because it was quite antagonistic, wasn't it? I felt almost to the point of being threatened at one point. It kind of felt that way.
Yeah.
But it was coming from a place where there was no understanding of the golf course and how it was playing out in front of him. He just didn't seem to see what was ahead of us. And, you know, and you think we could argue, we could be grumpy. Actually, let's just let this be. You know, we can smile about it now. It wasn't as bad as it could have been, and thank goodness it wasn't, because it on a different day that could have been a really sort of feisty exchange, and it didn't end up being as bad as it could have been.
No, it didn't. And I guess looking back on that, I mean, you know, I think what do I take away from that experience? One thing I found particularly intriguing about that was that of the two members at Craddock who were in, those two guys right behind us, the other one, not the one who was, you know, F-bombing about how annoyed he was at us for pace of play or whatever, was someone who, you know, I guess just him and I had a few discussions in days or weeks prior to that round about, you know, he'd given some feedback on the state of the course and things, and you know, it didn't feel to me in so much as the way that he presented that feedback was the most constructive, or there was quite a lot of, it wasn't heated either, but it made me feel anxious seeing that person again. But actually he really surprised me in a positive way when we came in at the end of that round, and he came up to us and apologized.
He did.
On behalf of,
but I think he realized what the situation was. You know, he saw actually that we waited for the next 5 holes on every tee, and they were with us waiting quite often, and therefore they realized it wasn't anything to do with us at that point. But it was too late because they'd had the blow up. But I was going to say, what it was a sort of looking back to the old days of golf clubs that became very unwelcoming and very insular,
yeah,
and very angsty towards younger generations. And it had connotations of,
yes,
know, a time gone by that I hadn't seen for a long time, really, at a golf club. But it's not Craddock specific. I'm sure these things go on all over the place. And this isn't to do down Craddock.
No.
A lovely, friendly, welcoming golf course in a golf club in every sense. It was one moment with one person, but it's how I do remember sort of 25 years ago how it could feel when you went to other golf clubs, and these things could happen quite easily. You know, if you were wearing the wrong socks, or you hit the ball and didn't shout four loudly enough, or these things could have occurred. They don't seem to occur as often anymore in my experience,
yes,
which is a good thing. And that's where we should be going, to being more understanding of each other
Yeah, totally. And I'm with you on that. But building on that, thinking of the guy who really sort of blew up and was quite angry, and it was quite funny because my recollection of it as well was I sort of did the whole pool rank thing and I was like, no, look, I'm a board member here and this is my guest, you know, he's our visitor and he's here to review the course. And he just, you know, he obviously was in the camp of, I don't think much of the board at this club and you're the reason why we're going downhill and all the rest of it kind of thing. So what I'd say to him and to anyone else listening to this podcast is it isn't just the board or the committee or the general manager of a golf club that has a responsibility to be a custodian and present the club in a good light. It's the average, it's the members as well.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing I come back to with that and in general, how I try and lead my life, it's just about being a good person, right? It's just an interaction, whether it's at the shops, in a car park, in your car. And obviously any interaction in any walk of life can leave a good or a bad feeling. If you're leaving more good feelings than bad feelings in any scenario with whatever's been dealt to you in front of you, leave more good feelings around. And that's all that is. And if you go around sort of bristling at everything, you leave bad feelings. And that's not what you want to be doing. And that's sucking energy out of other people as well. And it, obviously with a golf club, it makes it feel not as welcoming, which is what we're trying to get away from, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. But something you said a few minutes ago, which I do agree with, is fortunately, at least has been my experience in more recent years, it sounds like yours too, and hopefully for most of our listeners out there, is that kind of that old school that stuff's leaving the game. You know, it's hopefully becoming more inclusive in that regard. Anyway,
I agree, and I think golf realizes that there's a wave, particularly since COVID, of positivity around golf and uptake.
Yes.
But you've got to harness the interest that's been shown. And what you don't do is harness the interest by trying to keep people at arm's length. You know, you've got to let everybody in to this game.
Yeah.
And you've got to welcome everybody in with open arms, you know, and that's every standard, that's every sort of walk of life and type of golfer, recreational, competitive, whatever they want to get out of the game. We've all got to be able to move in the same waters. And I think at times we've tried to keep different clubs at arm's length and different types of players. And that's not going to work over the course of time. And there's a lot of pressure on golf to be sustainable in a number of ways. And golf has got to bat smart. And golfers and golf clubs have to bat smart. And I think we talked about it at Cleve today, you know, it's a PR piece playing a round of golf at Cleve, and you're representing the club to with walkers and people who might only be visiting the hill for one day on their trip to the Cotswolds. And those interactions you have with other people, you're actually selling the game of golf. I know Jeremy mentioned that.
Yes.
But we're selling the game of golf to people who don't normally interact with golf. And if they have a pleasant experience interacting with golfers on the hill, that's going to lead to more positivity about golf. And we're all responsible custodians of the game. I know that's it's a cliche point, but every single person who picks up a golf club has a responsibility to try and be a custodian of the game and sustain it and make it inclusive and open and allow other people to understand why we love the game so much, you know, and pass it on to future generations.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely. And, you know, there's part of this, I think, right, which is in a time where, yeah, you know, you look around the UK, for instance, public courses or courses anywhere, even sort of privately owned ones are maybe financially struggling, or a lot of you see clubs going under and things. It's like, in order to not just survive, but thrive as well, that's the business case. That's the commercial case almost as well for inclusivity and diversity and things as well. Because, yeah, you know, if you don't do that bit well, then, yeah,
it's true.
Drives people away.
It does. And that's about harnessing that positivity from COVID. That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
If it's not done the right way, there'll be no longevity to these peaks and troughs. You want it to be a peak that keeps going. You know, there'll be no longevity if we can't harness the positivity that has come in the last 5 to 10 years with the game.
Exactly. Yeah. So moving into, let's say, the final segment, one of the final questions I've got for you in this podcast conversation, Alex, probably one of my favorite parts so far of any Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, but is the eagle has landed. So this is the moment now where you talk us through
What's the shot that lives long in the memory? Where was it? The circumstances?
Oh, I mean, I've played a lot of golf in my time, so selecting a single shot is really difficult. I mean, it's going to be, rather than back to being about performance, this isn't going to be about hitting a good shot. This is going to be about hitting a shot that I would like to hit again. And for me, I was very lucky to play a golf course called Paso Tiempo. It's one of the public courses in the US. It's probably one of the highest ranked. It's where Alistair McKenzie, who built Augusta National of the Masters, he actually built Paso Tiempo. And then in his later years, he lived by the course because he loved it so much. He believed that that was his best course. And from a man who built Augusta, that's incredible. And it feels like that. It's on the west coast of California. And you kind of look out over Half Moon Bay, I think it's called. It's basically the town of Santa Cruz. And I was lucky enough to be the first tee out on a misty morning, a sunny morning, but a little bit of mist in the air, 7:30, looking down the first fairway at Paso Tiempo. That just is a par four that is downhill, straight, but beyond it, you've got the view of Santa Cruz and then that Californian beaches and over in and beyond to Pebble Beach and Monterey Peninsula. And I just remember standing on that tee thinking, no matter what shot I hit here, it really doesn't matter. You know, the memory is etched in my brain and it always will be, you know, to have the privilege to be the first to tee off down that fairway on this amazing morning. So that will always be a memory of all of my travels that, you know, I'd love to be in that position to be able to maybe one day hit that shot as on a similar morning again someday. And yeah, there's been great shots. There's been terrible shots. You know, my brother would, I played a course called All Woodley in Leeds. It's another McKenzie course, actually, his first. It's a very famous finish. It's very like St. Andrews. The first and the 18th share the same parcel of ground. They bring you back to the clubhouse. And I was very nervous because there was about 50 people sitting on a patio by the tee. And the first tee is literally arms reaching to the first table of the patio. So there's a bit of banter. And anyway, you know, I'm a bit nervous and I walked out to hit my tee shot and I pushed the ball right of the first fairway, but actually right of the 18th fairway, which is 150 yards from where I'm meant to be hitting it. Out of bounds, which is probably, if you ever go to All Woodley, and anybody who's listening to this who's been to All Woodley, that is one terrible tee shot. And it still lives with me now. You know, when you say you can't possibly lose a ball here, I would say, well, I've lost the ball on the first tee at All Woodley, 150 yeah. yards right of the fairway.
So this isn't the eagle has landed, the eagle has crashed.
The eagle has crashed 150 yards right of the first fairway at All Woodley. So yeah, those two, you know, performance. We all hit good shots, don't we, from time to time, like you did today.
Yeah.
But to me, it's more about the general setting and a memory that you'll never forget. And, you know, that Paso Tiempo first tee was definitely the one for me.
Love that. Love it. Maybe just to round this out, and because something you said, given your what you do, your golf course reviews, your travels and everything, you have played some like of the top like bucket list courses and things. It's probably hard to sort of narrow it into like one top course or, you know, but thinking of all these top courses that you've played, which are the ones that you would, that stick in your mind that you would almost recommend to the listener that are the really accessible ones, if you like, the ones that are not going to cost you £300, £400, £500 to play around that?
It's a really good question. And the US, this is something that some people in the UK who haven't traveled and played in places like the US would, US golf and pricing is very different there. So $100 for a round, £80, it is normal. You know, that's a normal amount you would pay for a Saturday round. So to give context to that, there's a course in just north of California called Rustic Canyon. Jeff Shackelford and Gil Hance designed the course, but the idea was sustainability, use of, you know, the land that was there, minimal footprint, and available to the public. It's just a great, fun place to play. And I know people like Eric Anders Lang and others who've talked about it have said it's got to be the best value green fee in the USA. And for me, out of the ones that I've played and seen in the USA, it's $50, $60, $70. So 40, 50 wow. pounds. It's great. It's really great fun. So that would be the one in the States. And I'm going to, there's two or three in the UK Cleve is definitely one, by the way, and I'm going to put it out there, but I'm biased, therefore it has to be discounted. I think one that's famous in the UK, I'm not sure if their green fees have changed in the last few years since I've played it, but Silloth and Solway, which is in north of the Lake District, it's a Lynx course. It's in the English 100 best courses, so it's not like it's a hidden gem. But it's always offered such great value. It's an amazing golf course, you know, for 50, 40, 50 pounds, 60 pounds, whatever the green fee is now at certain times of the week. It's such a good place to go and play some good golf for a decent amount. So that would be always the one. And I always look
for Silloth and Solway.
Silloth and Solway. So it's just if you're ever on your way to Scotland, hang a left for 45 minutes and go and play Silloth.
Anyway, I've loved this conversation. I've loved your company today, Alex.
No, I've really enjoyed it, Chris. And I wanted to say, and I don't know if it will have come out so far, but I believe very strongly that golf is good for you in a number of forms, but mental health-wise, going through any sort of tragedy. And I think what this pod offers so many people is that everybody's got stresses, times in life where they'll be down, divorce, you know, bereavement, all of these things, financial problems. Golf is so good, can be so good for so many people, but the key to it is understanding that the game is a conduit to just having clear headspace and not getting too bogged down in the technical side of the game. And if you can just embrace that side of it, when you play nicely like you did today, that's great, and you get both hits. But if you don't let a bad day affect that hit of just clear headspace and out in the elements, it's so powerful. And I've found that over the last 5 or 6 years, how good it is for your mind to be out on the golf course. So I think the pod and everything that you're doing is brilliant. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, Alex. Really appreciate it. Well, the hour and a half drive I've got back to Wales now is going to be a really nice one as I reflect, and along very similar lines to how you just described golf being good for you. So no, thank you. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Take care. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Before I head into the wrap-up section and offer my takeaways from today's conversation, just a word of reminder, please do leave us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. As I said earlier, I just wanted to spend a brief moment telling you a bit more about what's in it for you when you leave a review, basically. So it's as simple as this. The more positive reviews we get, the more the show grows, the more it gets noticed, the more the profile of the show increases. Now, you might still be wondering and asking yourself, but what's in it for me giving this review? Well, let me offer you an example of something. Bearing in mind that this podcast is only about 2 months old and has 6 full-length episodes to offer so far, for the first time the other day, I was approached directly by someone at pitching to have their client appear as a guest speaker on the podcast. That took me by surprise, given how new this podcast is, and it led me to thinking, and I'm totally convinced, that if it were not for the existing reviews that we've had, and if you look, for example, on Apple and Spotify podcast platforms, we've had 35 reviews across those two platforms, 5-star reviews, all of them. Without those, I don't think we would have that pull factor and that ability to attract people to be coming and approaching to ask to be on the podcast, rather than the other way around, which is everyone that has been on this podcast so far has been people that I've met or sourced myself. So again, tying this back to what that means for you, these reviews are clearly positively impacting our ability, your ability to attract great people, great guests to the podcast who have got great insights to share. They're prominent figures in the golf industry, in the golfing world. And so, yeah, hopefully you consider that a no-brainer. So enough on the review piece, but just offer some brief takeaways from me. I have 3 or 4 points here. I'd love to hear yours. Please do get in touch with me on email, chris@golfyourselfhealthy.com. The full email address can be found on our website on the contact tab. But mine are, firstly, number one is around inclusivity. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, and as you'll have heard through the conversation, I think Alex embodies being an inclusive person, and we both talked about the importance in the game of golf about continuing this surge of engagement that the game is enjoying, just to be a warm, welcoming and decent person when it comes to welcoming new people into the game. But also, for example, if you, as Alex does in his case, plays with new people and makes new relationships all the time, it's about how you carry yourself, and the kindness that you show towards other people can enhance your playing experience, but also the playing experience of your playing partner as well. Number two is the art form that is writing and journaling. I, since the launch of Golf Yourself Healthy, have got so much out of writing journal articles, but this has caused me to reflect on the art of writing and journaling, my thoughts and my feelings, my ideas more generally. I don't do it enough, but my early experiences with Golf Yourself Healthy of doing it have shown me how much I can get out of it, how much it allows me to process my feelings. And I feel better generally after having put pen to paper, and whether that's for Golf Yourself Healthy or it's just in my day-to-day life. Number three is understanding what golf is. I encourage you to think about, what is golf to you? For Alex, it's clearly golf has started from a place of his early experiences of it were playing as a junior, getting to a really good standard, playing it competitively. But throughout the course of his life and today, golf is much more about companionship. It's about appreciating the company of other people. It's the experiences that you make with other people and the relationships that you form with those people. And then lastly is nostalgia. The feeling, the notion of nostalgia is something that I love touching on in Golf Yourself Healthy podcast conversations. I just love the warmth of the story he told Alex about playing golf with his dad and his dad getting frustrated in the bunker and just launching the ball out of there. That gave me a really good laugh. And I love hearing stories like that from people, fond memories. So I encourage you to get in touch and share yours with me as well. And who knows, maybe depending on the stories that you care to share with me directly, we can get you on the podcast sometime in the future. So that's enough from me now. I would just like to again thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you in advance for your review. And looking forward to having you here the next time. And until then, please remember, always embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.